This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. It's February 10th, and I'm located in North Idaho, and here is where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to talk about how can you attach to your young adult child. And as guests, I have Nikki Priest. Nikki, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be with you today.
Okay. Well, Nikki is the executive director of Full Share Transition in Texas. It's a therapeutic boarding school for young adult women. And also on the line, we have Kevin Randall, the clinical director at Full Share. And welcome to you, Kevin. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Okay. And for those of you that are listening live, we're on k4hd.com. And in the lower right-hand corner of that website, there's a chat function. And the listeners can phone in or can type in questions, comments, and we'll try to respond to them as we go. So we're going to talk about attachment, young adult children, and how can you attach to them. So my first question is, what is the attachment model of treatment? Just in sort of general terms, and we'll drill in a little bit deeper. Nikki, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So the attachment model is really looking at every individual. So you, myself, the young adult, the parents. Attachment is what we use to connect and to relate to other people. So often when people hear the word attachment, they're taking it as like adoption and did this child attach to me? Well, all of us, all humans have an attachment system and we are biologically wired to connect and we seek soothing, comfort, and security through our attachment figures.
Okay, I've heard a lot about attachment parenting, and it's been quite a movement, and particularly focused on children. So how does this relate, or what are the similarities or differences between the attachment model of treatment and attachment parenting?
Yeah, so really what happens is that there's this belief that attachment is for babies and small children, and what we found is all of these difficult things that young adults and teenagers are struggling with have a strong foundation in attachment. And so, you know, you can watch these young adults, they can be struggling with depression or anxiety, they could be having sex or using drugs or cutting on themselves, all of those sorts of things. And it's all related to this attachment piece.
Okay, so they're trying to attach in all the wrong ways, I think is what you're saying.
That's right. Yeah, they'll do whatever they can to connect with somebody or to protect themselves in some way. And so it relates to the childhood model of attachment. It's really the same thing. What people are looking for is that secure attachment that's learned as a child, but it carries with us throughout our life. And it impacts all of our relationships that we have in some way, or we're impacted by others. And so what happens is we experience some sort of a threat from somebody around us. And that could be a relational threat, or it could be a real physical kind of a threat as far as a trauma is concerned. And we seek out some security. So you can think about this in terms of little children. When they experience the threat, it's hunger, or they need their diaper changed or whatever, and they're looking to get their needs met in some way. Well, as adults and as teenagers, we experience some kind of a threat in you know, a relationship, but maybe it's the threat that somebody could leave us. Maybe it's the threat that somebody has left us. Maybe it's a trauma, maybe just a variety of different things. And so then when we have that, our emotions go up and our attachment system is triggered and we're looking for that secure person, just like a child would look for a secure person. If we've been taught that there's not that secure person there, then we'll do one of two things. We are going to do everything we can to try and get somebody pulled in to connect with us, but we'll hyperactivate, or connect in some way, not in a healthy way, or we'll deactivate and we'll try and protect ourselves and just learn to handle the problem on ourselves. We'll close off.
Let's start sort of at the beginning on that. And what I've heard a lot about is the first 5 years are critical for a child to bond or detach their parents. And if that doesn't done very well, then the person is always trying to touch. And I think that's what you're talking about. And I suspect that's what you're working with at FullShare and with young adult women in particular, is that they somehow didn't attach very well, and then that it needs to be treated. Am I summarizing it correctly?
Yeah, you're right on. And the fact is those first 5 years are very important to the way that we see the world and the way our internal model tells us if we should have confidence in somebody being able to meet our needs. But it also, so often, you know, when people think about those first 5 years, they're like, well, my child wasn't abused or neglected. My child had everything they wanted and needed. There's also this other paradox of over-parenting, which I believe is, you know, what the movement of attached parenting is trying to correct. And this over-parenting of, like, not allowing your child to experience disappointment, struggle, failure, and so they're bubbling their child. So during that time, the child is learning an internal working model on that they are not capable. And so that manifests pretty unhealthy in adolescent and young adult as well.
Okay, and so then it needs to be put together, or in a sense sort of fixed. And so let's talk a little bit more about adult attachment, because most of it has been about children, and as you said in some material you sent me, there's not as much research on adult attachment as in child attachment. But so what are we talking about with adult attachment? And go over some of the things. I would imagine a trauma of some sort, or perhaps a kid moved around, or neglect on the part of the parents. One of the things you talked about, the thing that came to my mind, was helicopter parenting sometimes can interfere. So talk about some of the ways that the attachment can go poor that you have to work about, that you have to work on when you get into treatment.
Yeah. So you hit the four areas that we see. So if a person has experienced unpredictable or unreliable caregiving, then you're gonna see some attachment struggles. If they've had intrusive caregiving, that caregiving interferes with the acquisition of self-regulation skills. So the caregiver is constantly trying to regulate for the child and not allowing the child to struggle and then learn to regulate. As well as if a person has experienced explicit or implicit messages from an attachment figure that they are stupid, helpless, incompetent, or weak, that can also really create an insecure attachment. And then if they've had, like you said, traumatic or abusive experiences. So those four things we look at is if the person's experienced that we could be dealing with an insecure or an avoidant attachment.
I think one of the things, the word you didn't use in there, but I think a lack of trust. They didn't learn how to trust anybody. That's an important part too, isn't it?
Yeah, and we like to use the word, and trust is a great word as well, but I always look at trust as kind of this big ball of yarn. You know, it has so many layers and so many things that have woven into it. So we use the word confidence. Like, it starts at that basic level. They don't have the confidence that somebody will be there for them, or, like, if they have needs that need to be met, and so they have to create either crisis or chaos to try to pull somebody in to meet their needs. Or they distance and disassociate from relationships because it's too painful to try to activate that system.
Now, the as I understand it, the on attachment problems, reactive attachment disorder is the most extreme of that. But most kids that are young adults, they're not to that extreme, but it's there, right?
Absolutely. So the only thing that's in our diagnostic manual, and the only thing that's recognized mental health is, this reactive attachment disorder. It's an actual disorder, and there are specific criteria that one would have to go through in order to qualify for that disorder. What we are talking is just a general sense of what our attachment levels are. You know, so just like you or I experience depression or anxiety at some level, we may not have a clinical or formal diagnosis of it, but we may have a moment of feeling depressed or feeling anxious, and we'd be on a type of scale of that. That's what we're talking about with attachment work. And the girls the young ladies that we're seeing in our program and practice are these ones that have been in and out of therapy, in and out of treatment, trying to get help, and they've been diagnosed with so many different diagnoses, from depression, clinical depression, anxiety, borderline personality disorder, bipolar, eating disorders, addictions. I mean, the list goes on, and they've been on every medication that you can imagine to try to curb these symptoms. And when we really dissect it and look at it, we're looking through that lens of attachment. And what we're noticing is early on, this attachment schema was really, really messed up. And so they are responding out of that, and that's what the symptom is coming from.
That sounds like then attachment might be the sort of the root problem to all these other, a part of the root problem of all the other diagnoses. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. That gets me excited when you say that, because that's our mission as FullShare is to educate the world to look through this lens, because that's what we're seeing as the root of the problem. And if you add trauma onto that, so if you have an insecure attachment and have experienced some level of trauma, it doesn't have to be a major trauma. It can be what's termed in the mental health world as a little T trauma. That can spin somebody out, and it can look very much like depression or anxiety or a bipolar manic episode. When in fact what it is they have an insecure and unstable attachment, and they have experienced trauma, and so they're responding out of that, trying to get back to homeostasis.
Okay. Well, explain, you talk about you use a particular attachment model. Could you explain what you have in mind with that, and how does that differ from maybe any possibly other attachment models?
Yeah, absolutely we can. So is it okay if I back up just a little bit and give a little
sure.
bit of history on how we came to the model?
That'll
so, you know,
be
Len,
good.
You and I. Oh, good. So you and I were talking about at one point, and I'll just share it with your listeners. So when we were working with our young adult women, so our women are 18 to 24 year olds, and they're at a high level of needing a residential, long term residential care. And so when we were looking at this lens and trying to figure out how we're going to intervene in the most effective way, we began last year on this journey. And what happened was we had six of our newest clients in our program. And Kevin probably can explain it better. He was the one that was at the group, but he knows that I just talked for him, so I might as well just keep going. But so we're at this group, and Kevin asks these women how many years of therapy they've been in. Now, Lon, here's the truth. So we had six women. The average age of these women was 20 years old. And when you added up how much therapy, it totaled over 64 years of mental health therapy. So that means that our women had started therapy at 10 years old or earlier. I mean, that's crazy. So, and the worst part was when Kevin said, "Now tell me what you've learned about yourself." And one of the girls looked at him and said, "Nothing good." And the other women did kind of this body nod of yeah. And that's a travesty in our mental health system, that we have people in receiving therapeutic services for over 10 years, and they're still fighting and they're still struggling. And so we were saying, we have to do something different. We have to attack this different. We can't be just another, let's do some cognitive behavioral therapy and some skill development, and let's get some symptom management and medication management and be done. We had to really look at how are we going to intervene at a different level. And that's where we started looking at the research first and foremost.
Yeah. Can I interrupt here and then continue on?
Oh,
you mentioned something there. One of the girls said, "Nothing good." What does that imply? That they just learned all kinds of horrible things about themselves?
Oh, did we lose you, Lon?
Did they, when they say nothing good, what does that mean? It was just neutral? Or does it mean that they just learned how they were messing up and sort of negative impression of themselves? Yeah, Kevin,
right.
Your turn to talk.
Yeah. So.
Thanks, Lon.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that. So, it was really like I haven't learned anything good about myself. We focus on the negatives. We focus on my problems, my core issues, all of the time. And so there's sort of this building of this negative view of themselves. I'm somebody who's sick. I'm somebody who's depressed. I'm somebody who's anxious. I'm a borderline personality. I'm broken. I'm no good. And so these are the messages that these women are coming in with. And they've had these. It just keeps building like that, but they have that negative message. And so really what Nikki's saying is we had to look at what are we going to do that's different than all of the other treatment that they've had before in residential treatment centers for adolescents or in just individual therapy. And so we had to take a step back and look at what we were doing.
I think that's very interesting, and that's one of the criticisms I've heard of the mental health industry, that it's all on the positives and that everything, going back to the Freud and the original psychoanalysis, the focus was on the negative, and they made decisions about human nature based upon looking at the negatives, which made all of us look crazy or something of the sort. And sounds like you made a breakthrough as no. That's not the way to go. We got to look at the positive. We got to look at the gold and where you want to be at. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, and so there's a strong focus on us looking at the core meaning. What is it that brings them joy? We want them to experience that, and that's part of what we do in our program, you know, in the transition program, and as they prepare to come over to the transition portion of our program, is really to be able to have experiences where they live out of their core meaning or the positive part of who they are.
We got a few questions here. Let me go back on them. What am I saying? Are you saying it is an individual issue? How would you respond to that, Kevin?
Yeah, so is it an individual issue? Absolutely not. So I'm a strong proponent of family systems work. And when we're talking about attachment, there has to be somebody else there. When you really get down to this, what we're talking about is emotional regulation. And This is a big stumbling block in the field. You know, we have so much great stuff out there for emotional regulation, and that's all fine and good to a point. You know, you have great skills that you can learn, skills and those sorts of things, and they help you to be able to regulate your emotions if you're kind of in that place. But when somebody is in crisis, they can't use those self-regulation skills. They need somebody else to be with them. And that's where the co-regulation comes in. We need somebody to co-regulate with. We're hardwired to have relationships, and we just can't do this on our own. And especially, you know, people that have been struggling for a long time and that have these problems with attachment. And so there has to be somebody else. It can't just be an individual problem. The solution has to be with somebody else.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is when the question on is it an individual issue, you're saying no, it's relationship. It's a relationship on that. I have another question here, and again, about what we talked about a little bit ago. Was it the therapist that did it wrong that they came up with this negative look at themselves? Nikki, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there's any blame to be had. I think it's overall the mental health world is we tend, and it goes back to psychodynamic view, at times, and a Freudian view of we look at the deficit, we look at the problem, we're looking at the disorder or the disability, and so it's really that these women who are spending 10 years with the women we're dealing with, we're talking about, you know, it can be as a whole from couples therapy to individual therapy, child therapy, adolescent therapy, but they're going into a system that is looking at what is the symptom that's wrong, what's the deficit that's creating that, and how do we then bring them back up to satisfactory.
And the hidden message is you're messed up.
Yes. Yeah, often I have women coming into me often who will say, I just don't want to do this again. I just don't want to feel broken. And we'll have, I mean, it gets me all emotional because I'll look at them and say, you're not broken. It's not about fixing you. We're not here to fix you. That's not the message we should be sending as mental health workers.
Okay, well, good. That was a bit of an aside. Now, back to the question that we were on, and I interrupted you on that. Describe the adult attachment model you use and how it might differ from others.
Yeah, so in all of our research, we found probably the best book that we would recommend is pretty clinical and technical, but it's still a fun read for those of you who enjoy that. It's called Attachment in Adulthood. by Mario. I'm gonna mess up his name. Mukulinser and Philip Shaver. Attachment in Adulthood is the name of it. And so we used a lot of their research and work and adapted a model from them. So there's a ton of clinical research in attachment, and it's related mostly to children. But there's very little clinical application of it, and that's where we wanted to be different. We wanted to take the research and the theory and what people are finding, and we wanted to put it into application and practical application and see if we could heal the attachment system and thus see the symptoms reduced or gone. So rather than, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Did this come out of the or influenced by what's called the positive psychology movement I hear about periodically?
In our research of that, I don't know if it was influenced by that, but I think it definitely goes well together with positive psychology. Positive psychology is much about looking and teaching optimism and looking. I mean, I'm being really simplistic here, but looking at our strengths and how we grow those and encourage those, and it really is looking at that framework of people's positive and strength-based of how they come out. So I don't believe it was influenced or connected, but it definitely supports one another for sure.
Okay, well, that's what it looked like to me. And now regulation, I think one of you had mentioned regulation here. It was very important. Now, what's the difference between the terms you use, self-regulation and co-regulation? What do you mean by that?
Kevin? Yeah.
Whose turn?
So self-regulation is really it's taking our arousal level, and we're trying to do everything we can to do kind of a top-down approach, where we're using all of our skills and all of the things we've learned to be able to bring ourselves down. So self-regulation is really just, you know, I'll use all of my DBT skills. You know, you could go through the whole list, and it's really doing my best to make that happen. And so that works great at certain points. You know, if I can catch myself before I'm too emotionally dysregulated, then that's great. When we talk about co-regulation, what we're talking about is mediating the threats and managing the emotional arousal through the relationship with an attachment figure.
Let me interrupt here. So in parenting, co-regulation, it implies to me that you're talking about mom and dad, the parents, co-regulating in order to work with the child. Is that part of it, or am I going on a different tack?
Yeah, that certainly is part of it. And when you look at adult treatment, so we're working with people that are still, I mean, parents are going to be the primary attachment figure. That the research shows that they'll maintain that. But it also shows that we change attachment figures as well. And so for this young adult population, it could be somebody different. It could be if they have a significant other, you know, they can use that person as an attachment figure as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be mom and dad, but it could be a number of different people. We'll have a number of different attachment figures.
Well, and could I add in that one?
Sure, so please.
If we look at an example of a child who's at the park with his family and falls down and scrapes his knee, what's the first thing that child does?
Well, calls mom or dad.
Yeah, looks over to mom, looks to be soothed because what we just experienced was a threat. So a threat hit, an actual harm happened to the child, it scraped its knee, and what just happened was a biological reaction that is so quick that we can miss it, and that is they immediately seek safety by seeking proximity and connection with their attachment figure. So they go over to mom or to dad, and typically at that young age, the mother's attachment is a little is what they're co-regulating to, and that's just because of the 9-10 months that they're spending in the womb with the mother, and they become attached to the mother's psyche. But if we continue with my example, the child falls, scrapes its knee, looks to its mother, they're actually seeking soothing to what the mother is doing. And so the mother can actually, and there's research that can show this by Jim Cohen, that I had to make sure I had the name right, that that attachment can actually decrease the pain levels and what that child feels in terms of pain. So if the mother stays calm, picks up the child, soothes it, it doesn't have to take away the pain. It doesn't have to make it so it never hurt itself, just that they have to be able to allow for a space of pain to exist and for it not to overwhelm the child.
What happens when the child doesn't quite trust the parent? There's been a weak attachment. What happens? What goes through the mind of the child at that point?
Yeah, so when that's happening, what goes through is it's what we call deactivating. So their biological system will be ignited to seek attachment, but they've experienced reinforcement that it's not safe to seek attachment, either because it's broken or they don't have confidence or trust in their parents. So what they'll do is they'll start to deactivate, and what that could look like is you'll see rocking happening. They'll try to soothe themselves, or they may go and punch somebody else. You may see a child who goes and punches, or they may grab a rock and throw it. So that will happen in early childhood. What you may see in adolescence is when they experience a threat and pain like that, they may cut on themselves. They may turn to marijuana, cocaine, alcohol to numb those. They may turn to sexting, to reaching out on Facebook or to bullying. And all of those things are because they're trying to manage their emotional state that just activated their attachment system, and it's not safe to go there.
Okay, well, we have to take a quick break for an important announcement. This is Lon Woodbury. I'm talking with Nikki Priest and Kevin Randall, the executive director and the clinical director, respectively, of Fulshear Transitions in Texas, the therapeutic boarding school for young adult women. And this is about an organization called Saving Teens that helps parents financially that need or have children that need some sort of therapeutic intervention. We'll be back in about 1 minute.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Lon Woodbury back with you again on the Woodbury Report. Been talking with Nikki Priest, the executive director of Fulshear Transitions in Texas, and Kevin Randall, the clinical director. And we've been talking about how you can attach to your young adult child. And that's this is the part we're going to get into. And maybe, hopefully, what they have learned and suggestions for parents. We've been talking about attachment, attachment problems, and what happens. And so let's go into... let's talk a little bit more about the interference with, I'm using the term positive co-regulation. What are some of the things, obstacles, and then we'll get into how parents can overcome those.
So we'll start there with the obstacles and what's preventing a parent from getting into connection, rapport, and regulation with their child. And we've termed an acronym that we call SIT, S-I-T, SIT. So the first thing that gets in their way is the parent's own regulation ability. So we call it their own self-regulation or self-care for S, self-regulation. So parents need to have their own ability to be healthy. So through meditation, through their own therapy, through healthy eating and healthy living, they need to be taking care of themselves. In order to give to a child and to raise a child, they need to be able to regulate themselves, be in a regulatory state. So we can't regulate somebody else if we're not regulated, if that makes sense.
Okay, so the first thing is regulation themselves. Get in control.
Yes.
Get your own act together.
Yep.
Okay, number one.
Well said.
Okay, then what?
So the next step is the I, which is the intimate relationship. And so what they need to do is check the quality of the relationship with their daughter in the first place. So they need to make sure that they have some relationship. And this is hard with young adults because over a period of time when there's been significant trouble with self-injury or addictions or personality disorders, the relationship falls apart. And so it's hard for parents to be able to do what they need to do if the relationship isn't where it needs to be. And so they need to check that relationship. They also need to check the relationship with somebody who's going to help them regulate. So like Nikki said, if the parent is having trouble with their own self-regulation, who's their significant other that helps them regulate as well? Because they need to be able to step in and help support. So imagine this, if let's say a 20-year-old young woman calls her parents at 2:30 in the morning and she's struggling. A parent's response, you know, they might have that anxiety and they become dysregulated themselves. So before they're going to do any good with their daughter, there has to be a way for them to calm down, or they're going to be reactionary in that state. And so they might need to turn to a trusted friend, or they might need to turn to their spouse in order to be able to regulate.
Okay, there's a question here that sort of relates to that from a listener, and there's two questions sort of related. Can you reattach emotions? And the other is, can you reconnect with those who are lost? And I think that's what your job is there. You want to address that in continuing on when then talking about developing what parents can do to redevelop positive correlations or positive relationships?
Yeah, there absolutely is research that shows that we can reconnect and that we can heal the attachment system. So in order to know that, we have to understand that what is secure attachment? And so we call that the broaden and build cycle. And what that means is that there's been a threat, the attachment system is regulated, I was able to get soothing and comfort and security from my attachment figure, and I'm now better. So that doesn't mean, I didn't say anywhere in there that their problem was solved, that they were able to accept soothing from their attachment figure. And if they need 1,000 experiences of those. So we work with our young adult women on being able to recognize when I can sit and hold a space of negativity with them, like when they're angry and they're upset. I don't have to fix their problems, but I can provide a space for them. I can sit with them in that, and I can help them soothe through my regulatory system.
Okay, well, let's talk from the parents' perspective, and from what you've learned there at the school in the treatment milieu, what suggestions would you make with parents that want to try to do it on their own, or at least in their home situation? Maybe it's not as bad as needing treatment or a last-ditch stand before residential treatment. So what can the parents do?
Yeah, so we've created an acronym that we also call COMEBACK is what the parents can do. And we'll, if it's okay, I'll just give you what each of those things are, and
sure,
then
please.
We will... And then we'll go through what they mean. So the first thing is curious. So C is for curious. O is opportunity for growth. So viewing the struggles as an opportunity for the child's growth as well as the family growth or the parent growth. M is for matching the level of intensity. E is for empathy. B is for being neutral and set expectations. A is for acceptance and non-judgmental. C is for consult, and K is for kindness. So we try to give parents like a map of what they can do to look at that, and we can go through what those mean and how to have an experience within each one of those, if that's helpful.
Yes, please do, and maybe sort of add to it how a parent might be trying to do that. I think this is something like, please try this at home, suggestions.
Right. And so if I could, we would love to go through that. I want to give just a little caveat on prior to starting this as parents. I would like all of them to know that if they've experienced some significant trauma with their child or young adult, that they need to seek treatment themselves for that. Otherwise, they will not be able to engage in this comeback. They will not be able to co-regulate with their child or someone else, because they'll always be responding out of a trauma mode. So that's my little caveat before we begin. But we'll let I'll stop speaking and let Kevin go into being curious.
Okay. Well, that sounds like step one. Get your act together is in lay terms.
Get your act,
go ahead,
yeah.
Kevin. Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
Kevin.
And it really is. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it really is surprising, you know, how much parents don't recognize this. And I think it's an important point because it makes all the difference in the world. When they've had their daughter, you know, if they've experienced the self-injury, if they've experienced suicide attempts, if they've spent the night in the emergency room at some point, they could very well be experiencing symptoms of PTSD. And that's a huge deal. As a parent, you just sort of suck it up because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do as a parent. But being able to heal those symptoms of PTSD, that's going to be vital in your ability to be able to move forward in a relationship with your daughter. So I think I just want to emphasize that at that point because it is so essential that parents are really able to take care of themselves and recognize that they might very well be experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder in their relationship.
Okay, well, that's a good caveat on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the curious, the first thing is, so if parents are doing this at home, they need to be curious, right? So when their daughter is struggling, it's so easy to jump into this idea of, you know, I have all the answers as a parent. So I'll use an example from my school-age kids. So they come home and they say something like, I hate school. And I say, as a parent, you know, a very wise parent that I am, also a therapist, that I'll say, no, you don't. You like school. You like to hang out with your friends. You like this teacher over here. You like, you know, all of these things. And so that's not being curious at all. What if I was curious with my kid and I said, well, why don't you hate, or why do you hate school? And take that whole different approach, what I begin to find out is, well, there's this kid who is pushing me around or who's mistreating me. And that's a whole different thing. So as a parent, the natural reaction is, you know, sometimes not to be curious, but to help them be okay right now.
But I think another thing along really, that I think another thing along that line is listen to them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. They're coming and they're struggling for an issue, for a reason. You know, mm-hmm. and if you as a parent can put aside, you know, the fear that you have that your kid's not okay for a second, which is really hard. It really is hard. And then begin to listen, like you said, just listen and be curious. Continue to ask questions. Find out about the emotion that you're feeling.
Okay. We have about 6 minutes left, and then I want you to talk a little bit about FullShare, but about 6 minutes left, and the guest says, please finish the acronym. So we're on C, the first letter. So
curious.
Could you sort of briefly go through each one of the rest of them?
Yes, opportunity for growth is the next one. If parents can have a mind frame of looking at a struggle that their child is going through as an opportunity for growth, that they can overcome it, and that it's not the end of the world. That's the second one, is to be able to see their child's struggle as this child's opportunity to grow.
Okay, and third one.
Match the level of intensity. So this is really interesting because in our digital world, you know, if your kid comes to talk to you and you're busy typing on the computer or you're texting or whatever it is, you're not going to meet their gaze or their intensity of emotion. So we need to put our stuff down and we need to look and match that level. So they might come brokenhearted. They might come really angry. You have to be able to match kind of where they're at. And I want people to picture this in terms of what it's like as a small child. Again, when a baby is screaming or crying, we kind of match that level of intensity. We don't scream and cry back, but we raise our tone a little bit. We are a little more active. You know, you'll pick up the baby. You'll walk around. You'll start to give it a little bouncing around a little bit just to help the baby know that you're there. So you're matching that intensity of the baby in a very appropriate way. And this is really attunement is what it is.
Okay, but the next one?
Next one is empathy. So this is really trying to recognize where the other person is coming from. And this goes back to this being curious and then as well as matching the level. Like if oftentimes as parents, you know, we see a child's problem and we may think, oh, that's nothing. That's not big a deal. Or come on, you're better than this. We try to give them the pep talk. What really needs to happen is being empathetic, being able to see where they're coming from, being able to see their perspective and see what the struggle is.
Well, empathy has become big lately in all the literature, in the popular literature, is how important it is. Okay, and the next one?
Is to be neutral and set expectations. So this one, you can look at the marital research for just a minute. If your spouse comes home and they've had a lousy day at work and they talk about this awful coworker, and then if you as the spouse side with the coworker, you're kind of in big trouble. So if you think about this in terms of a parent and their adult child, they're coming to you with some pretty significant struggles and problems. Your job isn't to side with somebody else because maybe they're telling them the thing that you want them to hear, like you've wanted your child to hear this for a long time, and yay, someone else is saying it. At that moment, they need you just to be neutral and hear them out. Also with this one is set expectations. And so you're dealing with young adults. They don't get to have everything that they want. There's certain things that you're not going to be able to give them, and you need to be able to set them appropriately. But you can do that in a really good, appropriate, and healthy way.
Okay, and then the next letter?
The next one is A, which is acceptance and non-judgmental. Now, this is different than being neutral. So what Kevin just explained to you of being neutral is that, you know, you can remain understanding and on their side, and we felt it was really important to distinguish between being neutral and then moving into acceptance, and that is that I accept who this person is. I don't have to accept their behavior, but I can accept and stay non-judgmental in that this is a hard thing that they're going through, that this is that what they're experiencing is real, and that I accept them for who they are and for what they want to be.
That's very important, and I'm not sure where we're at on this acronym. Is there another letter?
You're on. We have two more.
Two more. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. And consult is really, that's really a big deal, and it's really hard as a parent. So we don't have to problem solve everything. Our roles switch, and this is one of the places where parents get stuck a lot. It's easy in the transition points from, you know, you parent differently when your child is an infant to a toddler, from toddler to school age, or school age to adolescence, and adolescence to young adults. And so one of those things that changes is that you don't have to give all the solutions anymore. And usually when you do, or often when you do, it's a lot like skeet shooting, where you throw something up and an idea out, and they shoot it down. And so it's best to be able to be a consultant at that point instead of the person who's problem solving.
Okay, and then the last letter.
And the last one is one of my favorites, which is kindness. And we feel this is very important, that not only are you kind to your daughter or your son, but you're also kind to yourself and to your spouse. It's a difficult task to be a parent, to be a partner, to be a step-parent, to have to watch your child struggle. And kindness is the root of all things. Kindness to yourself, that you're doing the best you can, that your child is doing the best you can. And if we can go back to one of the first ones, which is to view this as an opportunity for growth, it really helps fuel kindness.
Okay. Gee, that sounds like a blueprint for what parents might try in trying to work with their kids when they're having problems, and specifically from an attachment model perspective, right?
Yes. Yes, that's
okay.
Exactly what we wanted to give parents.
Mm-hmm. So if they follow that through, and they should have a little bit better luck. Well, just listening is one of the big ones. That's one of the most uncommon things I hear with kids that are having behavioral problems, you know, struggling teens, that nobody was listening to them, and so they got louder.
Yes. And listening and asking questions. I tell my parents that I work with all the time, ask 90% of your conversation with your teenager or young adult should be in a question form, and 10% should be in an advice form.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say something about that, because listening isn't always about the words, because sometimes the words are, you know, why don't you know, and a few explicit words, and they, you know, swears and move on. You know, that's what the words they're saying. But if you can look at the behavior and listen to the behavior, because that's part of what we're talking about with this adult attachment model, is that cutting is sending a message. It's about connecting or trying to protect myself. And all of it is about that relationship. And so as hard as it is, if your kid comes home and he's stoned, or if they're engaging in an eating disorder, it's hard to listen to the words, because the words aren't friendly and the words aren't about trying to find a solution often. But the behavior itself has a function, and if we can listen, so to speak, what's going on behind and look at this from the angle of attachment, what you begin to do is invite compassion, and you begin to invite solutions in a way where before there was power struggle and anger.
Okay, well, we have about 4 minutes left. Could you come up, can you think of a kid that has been one of your students there that went through it, and how did it turn out, and what was the particular struggle? So you can do that in a couple of minutes, and then I wanted you to talk about Fulcher Ranch, how people can get a hold of you or find out more information about you. So to get some sort of a case study, one of you?
Yeah, if I could, one of the women that come to mind is a beautiful young woman who came to us with severe depression, not wanting to get out of bed, not participating in life, still living at home, would try school and immediately would give it up, wouldn't go, failed out, very anxious with her life and with her world, and really just afraid of who she was. And as we gave her the opportunity to feel connected, to see all of her struggle as a growth opportunity, to be curious about her life, to match where she was at, to allow her to have the struggle but see her as confident and capable, intense, strong relationships were built, and she was able to overcome and to get to a place of just incredible healing and growth. I'll share with you just a quick sentence of hers that she shared with me, which is that she said, when she talks about Fulcher, she said, "I found partners who were gentle with my heart, who understood the darkness I had felt for so long, and who eventually helped bring light back into my life. I carry those relationships with me everywhere I go, and I believe I always will. I'm eternally and deeply grateful for my experience at Fulcher because I was finally able to meet my soulmate, something I had searched for my entire life." And so you can just hear relationship, relationship, relationship. She felt connected, attuned, and accepted, and was able to. Right now, she actually has graduated our program, and she is studying at a university and is very successful, and we're so proud of her.
Okay, well, that sounds like a great conclusion to what we're talking about on that. You have another minute or two. If anybody had any questions or wanted to learn more about Fulcher or your attachment model, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah,
Nikki?
So... Yes, I can run into that. So if they want to look at online, they can search us out at fulshertransition.com.
Better spell Fulcher. Better spell Fulcher. I always have trouble with that.
So it's F as in Frank, U-L-S-H-E-A-R, and then the word transition.com.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to give a phone number as well?
Sure, give the phone number. Some people are more inclined to that, particularly as older generation people.
Perfect. So you can reach us at, I have to make sure I give you the right number here. Where did my... 888-317-9229.
Okay, well, that's very good, and we've about run out of time. Thank you very much, Nikki. Thank you, Kevin. Good to have you here. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Lon. I love what you're doing, and we're so honored to be a part of this work and on this journey with so many amazing families.
Well, it's been my pleasure, too. Well, this is Lon Woodbury of the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking about how can you attach to your young adult child, and I've been talking to Nikki Priest and Kevin Randall, respectively, the Executive Director and Clinical Director of Fulcher Transitions, a therapeutic boarding school for young women in Texas.